And if you have a financial question for today's speakers, you can call the number, this number, 24/7, 1-888-6-ADVICE, 1-888-6-ADVICE. You can also email your questions to yourmoney@wealthenhancement.com. And, of course, call or text our studio line at 651-461-9226. Now, here's the founder of Wealth Enhancement Group and financial advisor, Bruce Helmer.
Hello, Laura Oakes. Good to be with you again. Today, Laura and listeners, Peg Webb is off again today, but we're very fortunate to have a great guest in Peg's place. Kate Meyer joins us. Kate has been a frequent guest on the show, and she's a very valued member of our roundtable team of specialists. Kate's just one of those people. Oftentimes when we bring guests on, we talk about their abilities, their technical expertise. Kate is just one of those super smart, abnormally smart people that I rely on and call on for help frequently. Kate has a undergraduate degrees in economics and French. She got her JD at Hamline University School of Law. And she's, like I said, a valued member of our roundtable team of specialists. And Kate actually works with high net worth clients, mostly private client services. And she works with advisors all over the country and brings her technical expertise, not just to Peg and I, but any advisor at Wealth Enhancement Group around the country where she's needed. And we invited Kate on today. We're going to talk, Kate, about charitable giving. And I guess the starting point for the topic that, you know, where I want to go is charitable giving can benefit the giver intrinsically. I mean, the benefactor is giving for social responsibility, to help causes near and dear to their heart. But a secondary reason can be there might be beneficial things that the giver or the benefactor gets, maybe tax breaks or an efficient transfer of wealth to the next generation. But Kate, one of the things, and maybe this is a good starting point, and I don't know if there's a definitive answer, over the last few years, we've seen giving fall, or I should say that, you know, there's been less people giving. There's still dollars, but there's less people giving than ever before. And there's a lot of theories as to why that is. But let's talk about just maybe start with charitable giving, why people do it, why it's declining, and why we think it's important enough of a topic that we're spending a show dedicated to the topic. Kate, thanks for joining us. I always appreciate your insights.
Sure. I'm always happy to be here.
So why do you think that charitable giving is declining? Any sense from your perspective?
Well, I always think of it first from a financial standpoint because that's kind of what I work in. And you know, ever since 2018, after the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act passed, a lot fewer people are itemizing deductions. And so you're no longer getting that tax benefit for charitable giving. So it's probably not as much at the forefront of some people's minds. You know, if you're not getting the financial benefit, you might not even be thinking about that charitable giving that maybe towards the end of the year you used to do, and you're trying to figure out your taxes, you may just start doing. So that's probably one aspect of it. Though I would assume when the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act expires, hopefully, or potentially at the end of next year, a lot more people start itemizing. So hopefully that means that more people will start thinking about that charitable giving again, at least from that financial standpoint.
I thought about that also as a potential reason, and I think you're right. But I also, then I argue with myself in my own brain, and I think most people that are philanthropic and do, you know, again, give to charity, they do so for intrinsic reasons, for social benefit, and, you know, and you know, altruistic, and they're not really motivated by any personal financial benefit. But you're right, if it's not on your mind because you don't get the deduction. I also, you know, I was thinking that maybe, you know, the global pandemic, COVID, had something to do with it. But this decline was a trend that we were seeing even before the pandemic happened. And if you look at the timeline, there does seem to be some consistency with, you know, the 2017 change in the tax law when most people stopped itemizing and started to take the standard deduction. So let's talk a little bit about why this is important and why people maybe want to do charitable giving, not just again for their desire to help others, their desire to be giving and help society and take social responsibility, but let's talk a little bit again about how that giving can benefit them. That's your perspective, as a JD, as a certified financial planner. You look at the technical, what's the benefit for the client. So let's talk a little bit about why this giving is important for the giver and other benefits that they can get besides these altruistic benefits.
Yeah, there's definitely the altruistic benefits. I mean, that's why I give. I have, a kind of my own areas where I like to focus, and I like to know that I'm doing good. But it also does help. I mean, it actually never hurts to have that financial benefit as well. So if you are able to itemize, you can get it a dollar-for-dollar deduction in your taxable income for the money you give, up to certain amounts to your adjusted gross income. But you do get some reductions in your taxable income, which then reduces your tax, which is, I think, a big reason that people, another reason that people like to give, just because you're getting that tax deduction. Some people say, I'd rather control where my money goes. I'd rather it go to a charity than the government. And so sometimes you get a little bit more control that way as well.
Yeah. And, you mentioned that, and maybe we should give some clarity to this. Peg and I talk about this not infrequently on the show, but the 2017 Tax Act, the change that raised the standard deduction, under current tax law, unless Congress takes action, and in my speaking engagements, I ask my audiences, based on our political climate today, do you think it's likely that Congress is going to be find agreement and take action? Based on the current law, that everything is going to sunset at the end of 2025, And the law will go back to the way it was before 2017, which means that standard deduction is going to come down again, which may lead to more itemizing. So this is not in our outline, and maybe it's a little bit off topic, and I don't want to throw you a curveball, but talk a little bit about that impending change and why at Wealth Enhancement we think taxes might be on sale right now and what planning opportunities there may be over the next 15 months.
Sure. Yeah, I actually have been talking about the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act a lot lately, so I'm well primed for this question. So when it comes to income taxes, when that law was passed at the end of 2017, what it did was essentially pretty much doubled the itemized deduction, and then it also, which is important for Minnesota listeners who have a higher, a lot people are paying higher taxes here than some other states. They also capped the state and local income tax deduction at $10,000. So when you have an itemized deduction of over $24,000 or $25,000 and you can't deduct all of your state income taxes, that made it much less likely that you're going to be able to itemize. And the other thing that they did was they dropped the tax bracket. So in 2017, if you're in the 25% tax bracket, you're likely now in the 22% tax bracket. People in the 28% bracket dropped down to 24%. So all the tax brackets kind of went down, and those are going to go back up to the 2017 levels in 2026. So on the one hand, you're getting taxes are on sale because you're paying lower rates right now. But on the other hand, more people are going to start itemizing again to hopefully reduce their taxable income in 2026. So it's a little bit of a trade-off, but I think generally speaking, taxes are going to go up for pretty much everybody in 2 years unless Congress acts before then.
So, Kate, I think everybody, that you mentioned that your giving is not necessarily financially motivated for you. I would say the same thing about myself. There's certain causes that are near and dear to my heart that I want to help. And I think for most people, that's their primary motivation. But like you said, if you can also get a benefit from your generosity, that's even better. So let's maybe talk a little bit. So again, most people are taking the standard deduction so they don't itemize. Before we're done, we'll get into some strategies that even if you're not itemizing, there might be some things you can do to maximize the efficiency of your charitable giving so you do get some kind of a tax benefit. But let's just start maybe with, what are the basics? If someone is philanthropic, if someone is generous, they want to do charitable giving, What are some of the basic things they need to know in order to maybe get some personal tax benefit or benefit from their generosity?
Well, as we've been saying, first you need to be able to itemize your deductions, and we'll talk about ways to do that now, even with a high standard deduction. But it also has to be a qualified charity. So it usually means it has to be a 501c3, and it also usually has to be a charity located in the United States. So if you're giving to entities outside the country, you want to make sure that you're doing some research and that they have some sort of entity in the U.S. that allow you to get that deduction. If you give cash, you probably, depending on how much you give, you might be able to get a higher deduction for cash because there are some limits. You can't deduct more than 60% of your adjusted gross income if you give cash. And if you're to give like appreciated assets or things like that, that drops down to 30%. So depending on how much you're giving away, if you're giving away a lot of money, cash versus appreciated assets might be something you want to consider. But if you gave appreciated assets, that also allows you to avoid having to realize the appreciation. So say you have some stock, you bought some Apple stock, like right at the beginning, it's hugely appreciated. If you gave that stock to a charity, they can sell it tax-free, and you don't have to realize that gain. So those are some things that you can do there. But when it comes to giving anything other than cash, there are some little bit more complications. You probably want to work with a financial advisor to make sure you're giving it properly to get that deduction. And then another thing that I think a lot of people don't realize is you need documentation from that charity. If you give anybody over $250, you need some sort of letter acknowledging that you gave this money, you did not get anything in return. If you're ever to get audited and you claimed all these charitable deductions, you didn't have that letter or that email from that charity, that deduction would be disallowed.
Yeah, I think that also probably, lends some, credibility that you know that the charity you're giving to, if they don't give you that, I think that's pretty standard operating procedure that they give you some sort of letter or receipt or acknowledgement of your charitable contribution. Kate, I wonder if some of the reasons, why giving is declining also that we didn't talk about is just the sheer complexity of it. Because again, I know most people that give, their primary motivation is their own generosity. But yeah, they might be thinking along the same lines of, yeah, I want to help, but I also want to get some benefit from it. And it's so confusing, so complicated. I don't itemize anymore. I don't see the benefit. And so the complexity, I think, can also be potentially a deterrent. One of the things that we do in our home, and I think this is probably something that a lot of listeners can relate to, is a lot of our giving is old stuff, clothes and whatnot. I'm not the same size that I used to be, so I accumulate a lot of clothes that don't fit anymore. And we give to veterans groups or military and whatnot. But how do you determine the value of that gift? I mean, most people on their own can't accurately, calculate what that non-cash charitable donation is worth. And so that might be a deterrent just because it's complicated.
Yes, it is. I mean, you can go online and look. Basically, when it comes to donating clothes and household items, you're going to be able to deduct kind of what they call like the garage sale value. So even if you're donating a $50 shirt that you've maybe worn twice, if you were to sell it at a garage sale, you might only sell it for $5. So that's what your deduction would be. You can go online and kind of figure out what your deductions are. This is not an advertisement, paid advertisement or anything, but I personally use itsdeductible.com. You can go in and literally and enter, okay, I donated 6 shirts at good value, and its deductible actually calculates it for me. So you can find things online that can help you figure out the value of the deduction when you're giving household items away.
What was that again, the website? That's probably useful information for people.
Yep. It's deductible.com.
Okay, I'm writing it down this time instead of just listening to you. It's deductible.com. Let's segue, Kate, into, okay, you're a generous person. You do charitable giving. You don't itemize anymore. You're taking a standard deduction. Let's talk about some strategies for folks like this. And specifically, I'm thinking a lot of the work that we do at Wealth Enhancement Group, we use something called a donor advised fund or a qualified charitable distribution when you have to take required minimum distributions from IRAs. Talk a little bit about those two concepts and how they come into play with our clients when we work with them.
All right. I'll start with a donor advised fund. That's kind of a way we talk to people now about grouping their itemized deductions into 1 year. And a donor advised fund allows you to do that. So you're not giving like 5 years worth of contributions, say, to your church all at once. You give it into a donor advised fund. So you calculate, okay, so I give X amount of money to my church every year. I'm going to front load that, take 5 years worth of that giving, put it into a donor advised fund this year. I can get that whole deduction this year, which might put me over that standard deduction. And then over the next 5 years, I can take money out of that donor advised fund and then give it to my church or my charity. And so that's one way that allows you to kind of strategically get your deductions in so that you can get over that itemized deduction and get a tax benefit for it. Just know that as you give it over the years from that donor advised fund, you don't get a second deduction because the donor advised fund is considered that charity. So that's the deduction you get is at the contribution. One of the big benefits of a donor advised fund is particularly if you're giving appreciated assets, that donor advised fund can sell it for you tax-free and then give the charity cash. So if you're giving to small charities that don't have a lot of staffing, and if you were to give them, you know, an appreciated asset, you're making them sell and do all that paperwork and everything, where the donor advised fund would do it on their for them and just give them cash. So it also makes it easier for those smaller charities in particular to receive those charitable gifts just because they don't have to do all the paperwork themselves. And then
yeah, it's really efficient. I'm sorry, Kate. I was just going to say it's really efficient and it's really effective in part because it simplifies things both for the receiver of the gift and the giver. I guess the biggest roadblock to doing that is a lot of people maybe can't accumulate enough to do it all at one time. You know, they do it over, you know, if they're doing, let's say, $5,000 a year over 5 years, they don't have $25,000 to do it all at once. That's usually what gets in the way. But otherwise, it's a very effective strategy, and it's good for, again, the benefactor and the charity receiving the gift. It's kind of like just escrowing or stockpiling money for future giving, right, the donor advised fund?
Yep, exactly. And you get the same charitable all right. benefits for giving to the donor advised fund that you would if you gave outright to the charity. And actually something I should have brought up, for those people who like to give anonymously, you know, sometimes you give to a charity and suddenly they just start sending you all these emails and everything and it drives you nuts.
Yep.
If you give through a donor yes. advice fund, that allows you to give anonymously so you can avoid those emails. Or, you know, if you just generally want to be anonymous, a donor advice fund can make that easier to do as well.
Yeah, really effective tool. Then you started to segue into QCDs, and I interrupted you. Talk about QCDs.
Yeah, so QCDs are for anybody who is over age 70 and a half. So I think we kind of generally say it's anybody who has an RMD, required minimum distribution from their IRA assets. But really, they never when they changed the RMDs, they did not change the QCD age. So you can start taking advantage of this as soon as you hit age 70 and a half. And what you do is you go to your IRA administrator and say, I want to give X charity, you know, this amount from my IRA. And they will write a check directly to the charity. So it never actually goes, it never goes into your own account. And by doing that, it then stays off of your tax return. So in these days when where nobody's itemizing, you know, usually you would take the money from your IRA, deposit your account, and then make the check. And so then you have to report that income from the IRA. By doing a QCD, you're actually not, you don't have to report the income, but then you don't get that offsetting deduction because the income never shows up on your tax return. And so that is a great way for people over 70 and a half to get around those itemized deduction issues now when it's so high. You can still get that tax benefit by just giving money directly from the IRA to the charity. You know, the IRA can still send you the check, so you can give it to them, but the check is not made out to you. It's made out to the charity.
Yeah, and again, this is such a great strategy It's particularly applicable if you want to be generous, if you want to do charitable giving anyway. One of the arguments I've heard against it is, well, if I'm giving my IRA withdrawal to a charity, then I don't have it to use it at retirement and use it for lifestyle, which is true. But if you're philanthropic anyway, it's an effective way of doing your charitable giving and actually getting some tax benefit for it. And Kate, really quickly, and actually we can come back on the other side of the break and dive just a little bit deeper. And then there's a couple other things we wanted to hit. We talk a little bit about charitable gift annuity and charitable trust, but we've got less than a minute left. And also there's callers on the line. There's texters coming in. But just really quickly, it still gets confusing for people. You mentioned it. The required minimum distribution age has been increasing over the years, and that's up to age 73 now, but it used to be 70 and a half. But 70 and a half is still the age that you can do these QCDs, even if you don't have to take a distribution from your IRA yet.
Right.
Laura, so I know we're about due for a break. Now. Oh, sorry.
Okay, Bruce, yes, you're right. Let's take a break right now. We do have a caller on the line and a couple of texts as well. We'll be back with Your Money on CCO after this. 8:34 now on CCO, and as always, if you have a question for Bruce or Kate this morning, you can call this number 24/7, 1-888-6-ADVICE. That's 1-888-6-ADVICE. You can also email your questions to yourmoney@wealthenhancement.com. And, of course, call or text our studio line at 651-461-9226. Again, here is the founder of Wealth Enhancement Group and financial advisor, Bruce Helmer.
Thank you, Laura Oakes. Thank you, listeners. If you joined us late, Kate Meyer is with us today. Kate is a certified financial planner and an attorney at Wealth Enhancement. She's been with Wealth Enhancement Group since 2007. She's a frequent guest on this program, and she's a valued member of the Wealth Enhancement Roundtable. She works with our advisors all over the country on private client services, high net worth clients. Her technical expertise in our industry is, I would say, pretty much unsurpassed. And today we're talking about charitable giving, the reasons to do it, the possible benefits for you as a giver beyond just the altruistic reward of your generosity. And Laura, there's probably a couple of other things Kate and I can hit on yet today, but if we have callers holding, let's not make them sit on the phone and wait. Let's maybe take a phone call or two.
Let's do it. We have Ken from Blaine on the line. Go ahead, Ken.
Good morning. I'm retired from working, and I have RMD funds every year that I have to determine what to do with. And what I've advice of my financial advisor a few years ago, we decided that what I would do is take some of that RMD money and give it to charities. And what would happen then is I would reduce the amount of taxable income at the same time donating to charities. And if I have more than I would want to donate, I can take some of that, and that would be taxable income when I do my taxes. But it's a good way of combining charitable donations and reducing taxes.
Hey, Kim, thanks for your call. That's exactly what Kate was talking about right before we went to the break, and I kind of stepped on your toes a little bit there, Kate. Maybe let's go back just for a minute and talk again about the qualified charitable distribution, the QCD. How does it work? Ken explained it actually really well. Ken sounds like he's utilizing the strategy. He understands it, and it's really arguably the most effective way to do your charitable giving to get the most benefit, because again, as we mentioned in the first half of the show, so many listeners, so many people right now are not itemizing. They're just taking standard deduction, and they're not getting any tax benefit for their generosity. QCD is one of the most efficient ways to do that. Kate?
Correct. And one thing I forgot to mention is that QCD does count towards your RMD. So whatever you take out of your IRA to give to charity, that is part of your RMD. So if you don't, you only have to pay tax on the amount of your RMD that you don't give to charity. That's not to say you can only give your RMD. You can give up to, this year you can give up to $105,000 via QCD to charities, and all of that stays off of your tax return. Actually, it probably shows up as a non-taxable distribution, but you don't have to, it never shows up as income on your tax return, so that you get that income benefit. And another thing that I should have brought up before is for those of you who are kind of have those, have to worry about AGI limits for, I don't know, taxable Social Security or Medicare premiums, by doing that QCD and keeping that off your tax return, you're also keeping your AGI lower, which potentially helps you stay under those limits that would otherwise bump you up to maybe a higher tax of Social Security or a higher Medicare premium. So that's another benefit you get through that QCD.
I'm gonna follow up on that one, Kate, and I hadn't even thought of that. But that's what we often refer to as ripple effects. When people look at their taxes, they tend to only look at their tax return and not understand the ripple effects or the consequences elsewhere, two of the biggest of which you just mentioned. On your Social Security benefit, you're going to pay taxes, and that's probably unavoidable and inevitable, but the percentage that you pay, you might have some control over that. It can be as low as 50% of your Social Security benefit, or as high as 85%, and you might be able to have some control over that with planning. And then the other one you mentioned is your Medicare Part B premium. Can you dig a little deeper on those two things and explain to listeners what you were talking about?
Sure. Social Security taxation there's kind of a complicated formula they do. But doing that formula, they figure out how much of your Social Security income you have to actually report on your tax return. And then that will determine whether or not your Social Security is taxed. Actually, if your income is low enough, it has to be pretty low, you can pay no tax on Social Security. And then if it's between certain dollar amounts, you're paying up to 50% tax, or, you know, up to 50% of your benefit is taxed. And then if you hit another threshold, then up to 85% of your benefit shows up in your tax return and is taxed. So if you're able to keep below those thresholds, if you're married filing jointly, if you're under 32,000, it's no tax. Between 32 and 44,000, it's up to 50%. And if your AGI is over 44, it's up to 85%. So if you can keep those dollar amounts lower, that helps reduce the tax on your Social Security. And then another large benefit has to come with Medicare premiums. So they have this thing called IRMA for Medicare, which basically means it's an income. I don't even remember what IRMA stands for, but it's everybody who's subject to IRMA knows what it is. Where if your modified adjusted gross income exceeds certain dollar amounts, your premiums start to go up. So in this year, if you're married and your adjusted gross income is over $206,000, your premium starts to go up from $2,100 to $3,000. And so the higher your income goes, the higher your premium ends up going. So if you can keep those income limits down through things like qualified charitable distributions, withdrawals from Roth accounts, things like that, that helps keep other consequences with premiums or taxes down as well that you might not even be considering right now.
Really quickly, I had on the outline, we also have a charitable gift annuity, charitable trust. Do you want to talk about those, or is there anything else that we're missing? And again, what we're talking about, if you joined this late, we're talking about charitable giving, but we're also talking about you benefiting from your generosity. And there's nothing wrong with that. It's not sacrilegious. It doesn't diminish your giving. If you know, I know most of us are motivated to help and to do good and to do well and to help others. But if we can get some financial benefit from our generosity, why not? It only makes sense to do that. So, Kate, either the charitable gift annuity and or charitable trust or anything else you think we're missing that you want to talk about.
Sure. Charitable gift annuity and charitable trust can be kind of have a similar do similar things for you. So these are people, if you have like a highly appreciated asset, or you just want to give a large amount of money right now to your chosen charity, but you still want to get some income back to help pay your expenses. Both a charitable gift annuity and a charitable remainder trust allow you to do that. The charitable gift annuity, you're dealing directly with the charity. You typically give them a large lump sum up right now. You get your tax benefit, your tax deduction right now. And then through an agreement with that charity, they're going to pay you back an annuity amount every year over a specified period of time up to your lifetime. And so this allows you to get that charitable benefit right now. You're working with the charity directly, so they know exactly what they're getting and when. And then that also allows you, ensures that you get a benefit, an income back every year to help pay your expenses. A charitable trust is similar to that, only you're not working directly with the charity. You're setting up an irrevocable trust where, again, you're putting money in up front. Usually, again, it's going to be an appreciated asset. So the charitable gift annuity or the trust will sell that right away for tax-free because they're tax-exempt. And then they're going to pay you, the trust is going to pay you either an annuity or unit trust amount every year. The thing to know, those payments back to you are going to be taxable, but it allows you to spread out the tax over something that you may have just sold in 1 year in a lump sum and paid the tax all in 1 year. Through these strategies, it allows you to stretch the tax out over a much longer period of time to hopefully reduce the overall tax benefits. And then at the end of the term, the charity gets whatever's left over.
And there is practical application here, Kate. Actually, last week on the program, we had a caller who's like a secretary or a treasurer for a charitable organization that called in to talk about this idea of a charitable gift annuity and also the charity, how they invest money. And I didn't really go down the road of the charitable gift annuity because I thought that the way that the person asked me the question, they were more focused on how do they invest this money once they get it. And I talked about that usually the organization will have a charter or some sort of description on what you can and can't do with the investments. But then the idea of giving the money back to the benefactor, this does come into play in the real world. And you know, we just had a question on it on the show last week. Last thoughts or other key takeaways, Kate, anything we missed or anything that you want to emphasize or reemphasize to our listeners with regard to efficiency of charitable giving?
Actually, one other thing. I mean, we've been talking about charitable giving during your lifetime, but there are a lot of people also want to give charitable bequests at death. And just kind of talking about that a little bit, you know, since I'm an estate planner, that's something I think about a lot. So if you want to give a charitable bequest, these tools, actually the charitable trust, the donor advised fund, things like that can still be useful upon death. But if you do, you can also give tax advantages to your heirs. You know, if you were to give, instead of leaving a charitable bequest in your will or revocable trust, maybe name that charity as a beneficiary of your IRA assets. And so then you're leaving this taxable asset that would otherwise be taxed to your kids to a tax exempt a charity. And then that donor advised fund, again, can be helpful. So maybe you don't know what charity you want to leave assets to at death, but you know you want to leave some to some charity. You can name that donor advised fund as that beneficiary of your IRA, and then later on decide, okay, who should the donor advised fund give these assets to? So that's something else to think about. Not only charitable giving at life, but for those of you who want to give charitable bequests, there are also some tools that we can use there to help reduce overall taxes that your heirs and your estate might have to pay.
That's a great point. Maybe we stop on that one and we invite listeners to join us. Again, text or call. And I would also tell listeners, it does not have to be just on the topic of charitable giving. Kate is an attorney. She focuses on legacy planning, estate planning. Her knowledge in financial planning, tax, estate planning world is vast. So we'll take as many questions as we can on any financial topic. And it's a good day to ask a question because, as you can hear by listening to her, Kate is pretty smart. We'll probably have a good answer. Laura?
Thank you, Bruce. And again, the number, if you'd like to call or text, is 651-461-9226. It's 847 on CCO. Okay, so here is one text question for you guys. I moved and did a lot of donating furniture and clothing. Will that flag me down for an IRS audit since I deduct on my taxes?
Kate, auditing? Getting audited for your charitable giving?
I don't think get audited simply because of the charitable giving. particularly if it's kind of a one-time donation of household artifacts. I think IRS just assumes that's going to happen from time to time. It would probably be more likely if you had a more complicated just tax situation altogether. They're going to audit you on that and then check your charitable deductions that way. Or if they were looking at your charities, if you were giving large amounts of household items every single year, the IRS would probably start thinking, well, they got to be running out of household items eventually if they're giving this much away. So I don't, charitable giving doesn't typically cause that kind of thing. It's usually when you have a more complicated tax situation and they're looking at other things, and while they're auditing you, then they'll also look at the charities.
All right.
Laura?
Yep, we have another text question, Bruce. You talk about harvesting gains or losses. I am retired and don't take anything out of my 401k, so this year I made more than the cost to pay off my mortgage. Paying off my mortgage would reduce monthly expenses. Is this a good idea? I have a low mortgage rate.
Kate, I have an opinion, but I'll let you go first.
I'm going to give my typical attorney answer and say it depends. I mean, if you have a low mortgage rate, you know, it depends on what you're going to do with that money elsewhere. If it's just going to sit in cash and you know, not earning as much as you're paying to your mortgage, then I would pay off the mortgage. If it's going to be sitting in something that might be earning more than your mortgage has, you know, there could be arguments to maybe keep the mortgage because of its low rate. But that said, you know, if you're just more comfortable not having that mortgage payment, I mean, you can't always think about the financial aspects of something. Sometimes you have to think about what's going to make you feel better, as long as it doesn't make you financially worse off. Sometimes having that peace of mind of having your mortgage paid off is worth maybe losing a little bit of that extra return that you'd have if you took, you know, kept the mortgage and reinvested the money that you have. So it really kind of depends on your own circumstances, what you're planning on doing with the money, and what you're comfortable with, having that mortgage payment ongoing or just having it paid off and having one less bill to worry about every month.
Great. Another caller.
Kate, I think that is such a good answer. I was sitting there as you were answering, thinking what I would add, and it's so good. I mean, it's almost exactly what I would have said, but I will add this. Frequent listeners to the show know that I don't want to say that Peg and I don't agree, because that's not true. But whenever we talk about debt, I talk about the efficiency of the debt and the cost of the debt service versus what you could earn on your money. And that's kind of exactly what you said. But Peg always comes back with her most financially successful clients. She believes are the vast majority of them are debt free. So she thinks being debt free, she probably places a little more importance on it than I do. And there's very well known financial minds in this world that would tell you that all debt is bad debt. Dave Ramsey comes to mind. He doesn't believe in any debt. Mm-hmm. But I think you have to look at the cost of the debt and compare that to the return on investment that you could get with those dollars. But, Kate, I love what you said about this is not all just an economic spreadsheet answer. Emotions come into play and your comfort level and your ability to sleep at night. And so I don't diminish any of those things. I can show my client economically why it might make sense to not pay off the mortgage. But if they feel better paying it off, I'm not going to tell them not to do that. Laura, can we take another question?
Yes, we sure can. We have Al on the line. Al in Plymouth. Go ahead.
Hi, Bruce and Peg. I'm 86 years old. I have two children and three grandchildren. I would like to, in my trust, my two kids, of course, are the beneficiaries of my estate, but I would like to leave some money to the three grandchildren. I'm wondering, is that taxable for them? And what account would be best to pull that money and leave it for my grandchildren?
Hey, Al, thanks for listening and thanks for your question. We've actually got Kate Meyer in today instead of Peg. And Kate, this question is right in your wheelhouse.
It is. First, I'll answer the first question first. It is not going to be taxable to your grandkids unless you leave them an IRA asset, a traditional IRA asset, in which case they would only be taxed upon the time of withdrawing the funds. As to what's the best asset to leave them, it really comes down to their age their economic situation, their taxes. If they're minor grandchildren, it might just be easier just to leave them some non-qualified funds and put it, depending on dollar amounts, either on an UTMA account, a uniform transfer to minor account, where you name your kids as the custodians, or if it's going to be a larger dollar amount, it might make sense to put it in an irrevocable trust for their benefit, because then you have a little bit more control. And UTMA will pay the account outright to your kid, your grandkids, when they reach age 21. Or if you put it in an irrevocable trust, you have more control over when that money is going to pay out to them and what it can be used for before it's paid out to them. The thing is, the irrevocable trust is going to be more costly to set up and more costly to keep, you know, keep going over the years until it pays out. So it really depends on kind of the age of your grandchildren, how much you're going to give them, and really how simple or complex you want to go. But generally speaking, if they're minor grandchildren, I would recommend not leaving IRA assets unless it's a Roth IRA, and potentially probably leaving non-qualified funds instead. But I would once you get your whole, yeah. Go ahead, Bruce.
I'm sorry, Kate. I didn't mean to step on your toes again. I'm looking at the clock, Laura. I'll kind of take us home here, I think. So, Al, again, thanks for your question. And Kate and listeners, Al's question really to me drives home the point that, number one, what is often called estate planning, Kate and I have even referenced estate planning. I like to sometimes call legacy planning. Sometimes when we say estate planning, people think estate taxes and they think my estate's not big. I don't need to do that. But estate planning is just, when you leave this world, assuming you don't spend your last dollar the day you take your last breath, where are you going to leave that money? How do you get it there as efficiently and effectively as you can? We all should be doing that. And Kate, what you have and who you leave it to can be tricky, because different beneficiaries are going to be taxed differently. Different assets are going to be taxed differently. So this estate and legacy planning thing is tricky. Don't try to do this alone. Laura, I know we're about out of time.
We are about out of time. Coming up on 8:56, Bruce. Thanks again, everybody, for listening to Your Money from Wealth Enhancement Group. Bruce and possibly Peg or another guest will be back next week at 8 o'clock right here on WCCO. It is mostly cloudy in the Twin Cities, 50 degrees. Heading for a high of 54 today on the breezy side. And then partly cloudy tonight, overnight low down to 38. Right now, mostly cloudy, 50 at News Talk 830 WCCO.